For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Mid-American Gardener, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. This week, I'm excited to be joined by Jim Schuster, a retired horticulture and plant pathologist, and one of the fabulous panelists from the Mid-American Gardener television show. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I'm going to start out with a question that may be obvious to you, but
okay.
For people out there who are listening, who may not know, what is plant pathology exactly?
Plant pathology is the disease of plants, and that is broken down into several different sections. Like, I majored in woody ornamental, basically trees and shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
They have pomology, which is the study of fruits, because it also includes strawberries and brambles, and their diseases. And then you have vegetable diseases, and you have turf diseases, and then you have floriculture diseases.
Oh, my gosh.
It
encompasses a lot.
Right.
Do you have a little niche that you like to focus on?
I like the woody plants. But I can answer a wide range, of other plant diseases, unless they're pretty brand new, because I've been retired for a while, but I'm pretty well caught up on most of them.
Well, when did your love of gardening or pathology, when did it start?
When I entered grad school. I was going to get a master's in horticulture,
mm-hmm.
and at that time there was a screw-up in the application because if you were currently attending the U of I, you did not have to get a transcript. However, the department head forgot that, and myself and three others were not accepted. When we went over to find out why, he says, no transcript. We said, well, we're currently attending the U of I. And his comment was, oh, yeah, I wrote that and I forgot it. So, too bad.
So, that's it? The classes are full and you can't get in?
That's right. So, anyway, I had been washing dishes over in the survey building in the pathology section. And they offered me an assistantship to get in pathology. And I said, okay.
Just like that.
And after I started doing it, I said, well, I like this better than horticulture.
Oh.
I found it more interesting because it's like, you got to solve problems.
Very serendipitous,
like
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny how things work.
Right.
So we have got several questions and emails today, and I thought we could jump right in and start out and see how many we can get through. So the first one, we received an email from Julie Alvis, and she wrote that she has a paper shredder, and is it possible to use the shredded paper in her compost pile or as a mulch?
Definitely. Now, the only thing I would recommend is you would like to make sure the ink is made from soybean oil.
How do you find that out?
Well, most of the ink now on regular paper or sold for printers and that is the soybean ink. What we recommend is do not use the magazine article stuff. That probably is not. So if it's on a glossy type paper, forget that. If it's on regular looking paper, make sure it's just well shredded and mix it in.
Okay. So anything you print off at home, if you've got the documents or what we're looking
at
even
right now?
A newspaper is okay?
The newspapers, as far as I know, in pretty much all the Midwest, have already switched to soybean ink. About 8-9 years ago.
Interesting. I had no idea what ink was made of. There you go.
And the original inks were made from oil.
And that would not. So if she's got any old books, don't start tearing them to pieces.
No, right.
Putting them on the compost heap.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully, Julie, that will help you. And Jim, the second email that we've got, would you like to respond to Carol?
Okay. She said 4 years ago, my large bed of annual impatiens suffered a virus that caused the leaves to drop and the stems to go soft. I was advised to avoid planting annual impatiens in that same bed for the next years Given the passage of time, is it safe now to assume planning of these impatiens in my bed? Thank you, a faithful viewer.
Thank
you. I don't
you,
think
Ken.
She had a virus.
Oh, you don't think so?
I think she had a root rot because the stem has started dying and the leaves that will die with that. And I don't know of any virus that lives in the soil that would cause it. All the virus diseases I know that affect plants are carried in from a dead plant on the surface or from a live plant, but not through the soil.
Ha. Huh.
So if she had impatiens and somebody else had a virus in the impatiens and she was in like a mile of that area, mm-hmm. an insect could have or a mite could have carried that in on the wind when, you know, because mites don't fly very well. They get blown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But based on how she wrote this, I suspect she had one of the root rots, such as Phytophthora or Pythium. Those are water moles. They like soils that are kept a little too wet when the plants are fairly young. And outside, the main root rot is Phytophthora. And the recommendation is you either find a fungicide that will control what they call water moles, Phytophthora and Pythium, or you wait several years to let the volume of mycelium for those diseases to drop way back to a normal, you know, what they call normal levels,
mm-hmm.
and which basically the plants can resist. And so you can then go ahead and replant, just as long as you have good drainage. That's the main thing that the root rots love, very poor drainage. Now, there is another one besides Phytophthora and Pythium, and it's called Fusarium. That one likes it wet to start, but it likes it to dry out afterwards. So if you hose your plants down a lot when you're first putting them in, you may get one of the three. And then if you once you say, oh, it's established, I'm letting it dry, then it's probably going to be the Fusarium that doing the killing. But basically, they all start with poor drainage or overwatering.
So maybe it could be just overwatering.
Yeah. And she didn't mention that, but just the symptoms and mm-hmm. how she said it was, they were saying it's in the ground, it's got to be one of the root rots.
So it's pretty safe then for Carol to replant some impatiens in the same ground.
Right.
As long as it's got good drainage.
Right.
Okay.
Or if she doesn't overwater.
Or she doesn't ever. Keep that watering can at bay, Carol.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for that. It was a great answer. And what do you have there, Jim? Do you have any other questions that we were looking at earlier?
Jan sent an email. She says, I have some boxwood that are 20 years old, and this spring they have dry brown leaves. Wondering if this is age, whether or and is it time to replace them? Well, we had a lot of winter kill. There's also some cankers on boxwood. And the cankers are going to show up because of winter damage. So you may have had death from the winter,
mm-hmm.
and then if it continues, then you may want to check to see if you also got cankers breeding because the plants were still under stress from the really cold weather we had. I have about 9 boxwoods, one right in the middle of it. Didn't get the whole plant. It just took 2 big branches, and it killed them.
Huh.
So I just pruned them out, and I'm letting the rest of the plant grow back in.
Well, you know, funny you should say that, because we have some boxwoods, and mm-hmm. we've been there for 2 years, and I think last year we just weren't watering them enough because it was so hot last year.
Right.
And I really thought that they had died. And then someone said, you know, give them a really good pruning,
right.
And they and basically water the heck out of them,
yeah.
And that's what we did. And just in the last couple of weeks,
right,
there's been fresh green buds growing. The bushes themselves look quite terrible because of being pruned back so much, but they are starting to come back. Yeah. So,
well, I'm going to give you a clue to tell if the branch has actually died or if it just lost the foliage.
Oh, yes, please.
You take your finger and with your fingernail, scratch the bark where the leaves have turned brown. If right underneath the bark it is green, it's going to grow. It's still alive. if you scratch the bark and it's brown to black under the bark, you can prune it out. It's deader than a doornail.
And is it okay to literally just prune out lots of bits of the same bush? And will it eventually all grow back around?
Well, if you got enough live branches, it'll fill in if you give it the time. When I cut my two big branches out, I also went inside. There's some branches that have died from lack of light. I pruned those out, too.
Okay.
So I've got a hole that's roughly 2 feet high, long, up and down, and about a foot and a half wide.
Wow.
It looks uglier than sin.
Right.
I am going to let it go through the summer because all the green growth sideways is already starting to aim towards that opening because they have less competition.
Okay.
So I'm going to see how much it fills in. I don't think it's going to fill in the entire hole this summer.
Year.
I get, you know, 2 years.
You're going to persevere.
Yeah, I'm going to persevere.
Well, maybe we should do that. Now, if Jan doesn't want to persevere or it doesn't work out, what would you recommend? Because obviously hers were there for 20 plus years,
yeah.
So she's had a good place for
right.
them.
Right.
What could you put instead of boxwoods?
I would look at some of the evergreens, needle evergreens, like a yew. And if I, depending on how wide you want it, because boxwoods are a fairly broad plant as well as they can grow tall. So if you want the width, then you would get a yew, for example, that spreads. If you want it narrow but taller, so you can use it as a hedge, you would get a Hicks yew. Because that's more of an upright. And, you know, 3 to 4 feet is about as high as you want to let that go before it wants to kind of lean outward. It won't grow outward. It just, the height will just want to push them out.
Right.
But if you really want the width, there are some nice broad-spreading yews. Now, there also are junipers. There are bushes. The Fisher, which is 15 feet high, 15 feet wide.
Wow.
The Hess juniper, which is about 15 feet wide and 12 feet wide. I mean, 15 feet high and 12 wide. And then you also got some bush arborvitae. Now, I'll also say some problems. The bagworms love arborvitae and junipers. So you got to keep an eye out for those guys and pull the bags off before you get too much damage done. The yew likes it, good drainage. So, again, if you have poor drainage. But if she was growing boxwood for 20 years, she's got the drainage. So.
Okay, great. Well, Jan, hopefully that helps you a little bit. We got a voicemail from Martin in Chicago. And he said,
I had a soil test done. And on the test, it came back that the pH was 7.0. And that on the... It said that I needed, like, urea, and I don't really know what that is, and maybe I can get some help on that. And, you know, like, if my pH 7.0 is right, or should I lower it? Thank you.
Well, first of all, pH is run from 0 to 14. 7 is neutral. Below 7, you're acidic. North of that or higher than that, you're alkaline. Most plants, the vast majority of plants, like between 6.5 and 6.8, but they can take 6 to 7. That's then probably about 90% of the plants we grow. There are very few that like it higher than 7. Okay.
Oh.
But in like where I used to be in DuPage County, we had soils that were 7.5, 7.6, 7.8, and even 8. And those plants turned yellow quite often because they weren't getting the nutrients. Because the higher the pH, the harder the plants are to get the nutrients out of the soil. So at 7, you may want to consider something to make it a little bit more acidic, but urea, which is organic type nitrogen, is very water soluble. It will leach out like crazy. So you can put it down and you have a very short term of acidifying that soil. And it's also going to give you lots of nitrogen. I mean, urea is basically nitrogen, you know, one kind of it. And so depending on what you are growing there, you may get a lot of plant growth that you really don't want because basically you can grow the top faster than you can grow the roots. And then the plants will have problems because they've got too much top and not enough of the root system. So instead of using urea, I would use sulfur. Now, there are several kinds of sulfur. You got pure sulfur, basically it's 99.9% pure. You got iron sulfate, and you got aluminum sulfate. The aluminum sulfate is the most commonly sold form of sulfur in a garden center. Avoid that. Yet the iron sulfate, most people can't find the pure sulfur. That's usually sold in greenhouses. So iron sulfate, and you would have to find a reputable company that will tell you exactly how much iron sulfate you need to lower it down to 6.8 to 6.5. But if this was my yard, depending on what I was trying to do or grow, I'd ignore it. Because 7 not that really that bad for, you know, I mean, it's at the top level, but it saves a lot of work.
Right. And research, by the sounds of it.
And you also, when you put the sulfur down, you got to incorporate it. You can't just throw it on the surface.
Oh, you can't do a quick sprinkle.
No. Then all you do is acidify the very surface. You got to get it in the soil to do the job.
Okay. And obviously, it depends also on what he's growing.
Right.
So, yeah. But Martin, it doesn't sound like you might not have to do anything, which is kind of good. I need to remind our listeners that this is the last chance to hop on the bus. We have still got a couple of spaces left for the Saturday, June 9th Mid-American Gardener bus tour that is going to take gardening fans, along with some amazing master gardeners, for a day of garden fun at the 79-acre Missouri Botanical Gardens. There is a bonus stop on the way at Allwirtz Garden Center in Altamont. And the tour includes admittance to the gardens, lunch at Sassafras Restaurant, and time to explore. The trip is available as a thank you for a donation of $150 or more to Illinois Public Media. That's just $12.50 a month. If you're interested, get online today and visit will.illinois.edu/willtravel and reserve your spot on the garden bus trip to St. Louis. We'll also include a link on the website with that information. Jim, have you been there?
I've been to the Botanic Gardens. They're beautiful.
I hear a lot of good things about them.
Anybody that goes on that trip are going to love to see those gardens. They're fantastic.
It's well worth it then. And you get the bonus stop on the way.
Right.
And lunch thrown in. Can't beat that. So, the other voicemail that I had was from Barb in Mattoon. She says,
my name's Barb. I'm from Mattoon, Illinois. My azalea isn't blooming very well, so what do you think I've done wrong? This is the first year it's not bloomed well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm going to blame the bad spring. We had, when these plants were trying to bloom, we were in April, basically. And if everybody remembers, it was cold and it was wet.
It was frigid.
Yes.
Yes.
And Azaleas, Botrytis, loves wet weather. And Botrytis attacks the flowers and attacks the flower buds, and it can grow down from that into the stem. But my bet is if the flowers didn't last very long, she had Botrytis. And one of the ways you can tell if you got Botrytis in your flowers is you get brown spots in the petal. You may get it on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's old age, it's brown along the outer edge and across the top and down the other side. Kind of uniform browning. But if there's spots on the edge or in the middle of the petal, you got a disease. And this Botrytis, and Botrytis grows from 32 degrees to about 78 degrees.
Can she fix it?
There is a fungicide for that, but you got to spray before you see it.
Oh.
And because it's an azalea and you don't know what's going to happen, I'm just wait for next year and see what happens next year.
So it basically just keep on tending it and then see what happens next year.
Botrytis is a disease that occurs all growing season long, as long as you got moisture, and that can be a dew, that can be overhead watering, it can be rain. And as long as the temperatures are between 32 and about 70-some degrees, you can get Botrytis. And it overwinters on live plants, like strawberry leaves and mum leaves, and it also overwinters on dead plants.
Oh, my gosh. Sounds like a pesky little thing.
Yeah. So you got to, you know, the recommendation about sanitation, clean things up, that's important. So, but again, you need to worry about that if you actually have it. So if she had that on her azaleas, she also should keep an eye on her other flowers, and that includes flowers on shrubs and trees.
So you mentioned sanitation and keeping things clean. What is the generally should people be doing to do that?
If they know they have the disease, you remove the diseased flower, or if it actually, like, it also attacks fruit, like strawberries, you would pull them off. By the way, you don't have to throw the whole strawberry away. You just cut the part off of the brown spot in it, and you can eat the other half.
Oh.
And if you really don't care, you can eat the whole thing, because botrytis is not going to hurt a human. Okay? But it does go on fruit. But yeah, basically, you look for where the spots are on your flowers, and you cut the flower off. And you don't, if you're legally allowed to burn, you burn it. Otherwise, dig a hole and bury it.
Okay. There you go. So no chemicals or anything to clean when you said sanitize.
Yeah, sanitize. There are some fungicides, but and if you got it occurring over and over, then you start using a fungicide to hold it in check. But you still periodically want to check for those that got the fungicide lasts 2 weeks or so, depending on how much rain or watering you're doing. And so if you're not careful, you may start again before you get your next fungicide on. So you need to periodically check for spots and remove them, and then make sure you use the fungicide. And by the way, you get the fungus in the foliage before the spots may show up, or in the petals. So you may put a fungicide down. I just put a fungicide down yesterday and I got spots. Well, that would mean it was already infected when you put the fungicide on. So you got to have it before. Most fungicides are preventive. They're not curative.
So is it okay to use fungicides all the time then? Even if, you know, if you want to
look at your environment. You know, I don't recommend it unless you're really desperate. As a plant pathologist, I've used fungicides once in my entire career. And that was 40-something plus years. First of all, as a plant pathologist, I like the disease. You know, I take pictures. I take samples. You know, I use them to teach with. But also, it's part of nature. I don't have to have a picture-perfect plant. I always tell people, too, you know, it's a spot. Pull that leaf off or pull that petal off. If it's on your tree, quit looking up. You know?
Keep your head down.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've got time for one more question,
okay.
Jim. Do you have anything there that we could respond to that tickles your fancy?
Okay. Yeah, they have a cedar tree with cedar apple rust.
Who is that?
It's a fungus.
No, who is
it? Oh, I'm sorry. Judy Davison.
Okay, Judy.
And this starts pretty much, again, it's a moisture-related and it's windblown. It needs two hosts. The one host is the upright juniper, the red cedar. The other host is the apple, okay, or the crab apples, okay? It's the Mollis genus. There is also a hawthorn rust, and there's a quince rust. The apple rust pretty much stays on the Mollis genus, and quince rust does not go anywhere near the Mollis. It goes on hawthorn and quince and a few other plants in those two families, but it doesn't go on apple. Basically, it's a preventive fungicide. You start when the buds are showing a little bit of green, and then you start your fungicides, and every 7 to 14 days, depending on how often it rains, you can use a fungicide. But actually, I say it starts at bud break. That's provided the galls of the rust on the juniper are also making teleohorns. Okay. You look on your juniper for a round brown ball. And when it's producing, and that ball will be there all winter long. And this spring, when it's the right temperature and moisture, those round balls put out orange horns. And those horns have the spores of the fungi that are going over to the apple. when you start seeing those horns, that's actually when you should be spraying your deciduous plant, the apple or the crab apple. If you're spraying before those horns show up, it's a waste of fungicide.
Okay. Wait for the horns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but try and get them when you, before they get too long. You want, because if they're full grown, they're actually releasing spores. You want to start seeing the little brown orange bumps coming out of the horn and start the program then.
Okay.
So, you know, remember, it's preventative.
Okay. Judy, hope that helps you. Now, I have one more question for you, Jim. If you were a plant disease, what would you like to be and why?
Oh, I would want to be a disease that lasts for a long time. I know what? I think I would like to be verticillium wilt.
And what is that?
Verticillium wilt is a soil-borne disease. It's one of the things that kills your maples, especially the Norways. It kills flowers. It kills a wide range of plants. Verticillium is a genus, and it's got a lot of species and races. But as a general, the Verticillium genus, because I can also live in their soil for about ever, because I can go into a resting period and wait for your plant to come under stress so I can attack you.
Oh, my gosh. You're like an undercover.
Yeah.
You stealth
yeah.
guy. Wow. Okay.
And by the way, there's not a whole lot you can do about me.
You cannot get rid of Jim. Thank you so much for coming in, Jim.
Oh, you're welcome.
As usual, I learned something, and I hope that everyone out there did too. Many thanks to you, listeners, for joining us for another fabulous episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Braltz. Find us on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream us as many times as you like. This and past episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. Subscribe and rate with abandon. And if you have any gardening questions for future inclusion on either the TV show or this podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com or message us via Facebook or call and leave a voicemail at 217-300-8224. Thank you so much again to Jim Schuster, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another gardening whiz. In the meantime, stay cool and dry, as it actually rained today. So, thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.